Welcome to Influential Visions Podcast. Here, we interview futuristic leaders who share their deep industry knowledge and business experience with you, ensuring you have your finger on the pulse and your eyes wide open. In this series about imposter syndrome, our regular host, Nathaniel Schooler, is joined by Kim Adele Platz as they interview leaders from around the world, sharing how they overcame their inner imposter.
So today I am joined again by Kim Adele Platz and an old guest and a great person, Michael Tobin, technology entrepreneur and Hi. Philanthropist.
Hi, Nat. Hi, Kim. I'm a bit worried about that old comment there, Nat. Just because I haven't been able to get to the hairdresser for my monthly dye doesn't mean to say I'm necessarily getting old.
I love it.
You've supported my podcasting efforts from day one. That's why I called you old.
All right. Okay. As in age of relationship.
Good. Yeah. And we've co-hosted a lot of shows together on the Positive Power Show and interviewed some amazing people. And you know, it's very interesting that we're doing this series on imposter syndrome. And yeah, I mean, you standing up, talking in front of lots and lots of people, you know, throughout your career, there must have been points where you probably stood there and thought, what am I doing here? Is that fair to say?
Well, I think in later life, I kind of knew why I was standing there, because you started to understand your wisdom versus who you're speaking to, there's the self-confidence kind of that comes from that. But in earlier times, I was very much self-conscious about not having as much knowledge as the people around me. I started to see that as a benefit, because what I advise people in terms of, you know, entrepreneurship is, you know, whatever your business, you know, however early you want to start, just surround yourself with the best possible people you can find at any given time or you can afford. And of course, they're going to know more than you about their subject. That's what you want. And that becomes a positive rather than something that you should be afraid of.
Yeah, no, that's such great advice, because I think, you know, when you look at lots of the really great thought leaders, that what they've been skilled at is being confident to employ people that are better than they are at certain things, to enable them to collectively grow. But I guess that when you first start out, that can be a little bit daunting, can't it, to surround yourself with people that are more knowledgeable than you.
Yeah, and it's also daunting for, I mean, it's probably, I would say it's less daunting for an entrepreneur starting out than it is for someone in middle management progressing through a corporate structure. Because for an entrepreneur, he's come up with an idea or she's come up with an idea. And you know, that sort of passion is very hard to replicate with the people around them, even if they are infinitely brighter in all their different skill sets. So you get the best marketing person, the best finance guy, but when you're progressing through a corporate structure, I find it, you know, there's probably two or three people at any given time looking for that one promotion place, right? And you're always in competition with people around you, and you probably are of similar knowledge structure and knowledge base as well. So you know, it's a level playing field. So I think it's tougher for the career sort of enterprise person than it is for an entrepreneur. And I think also that the point about this is generally entrepreneurs are typically younger and are sort of at a point in their career that they can fail without it being life-changing. And I think the interesting thing, I mean, in our house, we try to avoid, we have a policy of trying to avoid two words. One is fail and one is mistake. And we either have success or learning. And that we've spoken about this many times before, but it's really important, because you don't fail. You just learn how things don't work or how not to do something. And I think if most entrepreneurs have a great opportunity early, if they're courageous enough, to to fail many times and work it out before it starts to become important not to get it wrong. In other words, you get a family, you get married, you have kids, you have responsibilities, you have liabilities, and then suddenly getting it wrong is much more risky than it was before when you didn't have all of that. So I think getting, you know, learning your lessons early is important. And you know, obviously one of the lessons you learn is self-confidence, because you can get beaten up and fall over, get up again, and the world's still going round.
Yeah, no, I love that. And it is one of the things, isn't it? You get to that. One of the things I always ask myself is, what's the worst that can happen and can I live with it? And like you say, you kind of get to the end of it, and even if you've fallen, you're still here, you're still living, you're still breathing, and you've still got a chance to get up and start again, haven't you?
Yeah, and so one of the things I talk about in my first book, Forget Strategy, Get Results, was that a story that when I'd inherited this business back in the early 2000s, I wanted to consolidate the industry. So we had one big competitor. If you think of sort of, you know, I don't know, IBM and HP, or, you know, two big banks, and I wanted to merge these two organizations together. And I told my management team, and they were naturally, understandably, sort of nervous, because they were sort of saying, well, you know, two companies coming together, that's two people for the same job, someone's going to lose their job, I'm really worried. And this kind of fear started to instill. And, you know, I tried to explain to them in words, you know, the fear is a kind of a wasted emotion, because, you know, you never fear the past and you never fear the present, you fear the future. And we always apply far more sort of negativity to what could go wrong than actually what there is to go wrong. And also, you know, either you can do something about the future, in which case you should do it to mitigate that risk. And if there's nothing you can do, well, there's nothing you can do, so why worry about it, right? So that, you know, but telling them didn't work. So I took them up to Scotland, and they thought they were going to a whiskey tasting in Edinburgh, but we crossed the Firth of Forth on the old road, on the old bridge, not the new one. And as you cross going north, there's a massive aquarium right on the Firth of Forth. And when you're in it, it's so big, you feel like you're in open water. And as we pulled up, they all got out, and I said, okay, two by two, get changed into your wetsuits. And they went, what? And I said, go on, two by two, get changed into wetsuits, breathing apparatus, the whole thing. And then two by two, they went into the water. And as they were putting their legs over into this massive aquarium, they started to see the shark fins in front of them. And they got very nervous. And of course, I got sworn at and insulted and God knows what else. But eventually, all of them went in and went down to the bottom. And these massive sharks, 4 meter sharks, no net, no cage. And they were coming right up to you, literally just a few inches away. And when they came out, because eventually they all did come out, I asked them, so, you know, how did you feel when you realized what you were about to do? And they said, oh my God, it was so terrible. I was terrified. I hated you. I swore at you. What did my lawyer, you know? And then I said, well, how did you feel when you're actually on the seabed and these things were coming up to you, but you know, they weren't eating you, right? And they said, well, it was amazing. It was so exciting, really incredible feeling. I was still a little bit nervous, but it was amazing. And I said, well, how do you feel now that you're out? And they went, oh my God, life changing. I don't want to do it again, but I've got something to tell my grandchildren. It's just amazing experience. I said, well, every time you have this irrational fear of the future, right? Think about that journey. You're probably going to learn a ton of stuff on the way about yourself, about life. And when you come out, it's almost certainly never going to be as bad as you thought it would be. You know, and you know, the ones I didn't want to carry on with me and I was going to make redundant, I gave them a little nick on the arm anyway. So that was to get that sorted out too. So I think it's important to go through experiences to learn this rather than just be told, because, you know, you can listen to a podcast like this and it might give you the inspiration to sort of think about things in a way, but you only really learn through experience. And, you know, that's why I think it's a shame we can't have a vaccine for experience, you know? So I'd love to just, like, every time you tell a kid, you know, don't touch it, it's hot, what's the first thing they do? Yes, you know, put their hand on a hot plate. So if you could just inject them with all the knowledge and experience that you've grown up with and endured, then it would seem so much quicker, but you can't.
No, that is so true. I love the whole swimming with sharks. I mean, I can only imagine their faces. Bless them. They think you're going to a whiskey tasting and you end up in a wetsuit with sharks. That's quite a difference, isn't it? But I imagine from that there was, which I guess to your point, it's about the experience, isn't it? It's about being able to see that you took something that you were terrified about, and within, you know, the matter of an hour, you've gone through it and come out the other side, and actually you've lived to tell the tale. And it's all the things you've learned within that, isn't it?
And you know, people have bucket list. I have a bunch of bucket list things. There's only a couple left to tick off, thank goodness, because I'm getting old, as Nat said earlier on. But one of them was jumping out of a plane, right? And you know, you build up this bravado, and then but nothing replaces that kind of gut churning fear when you're sitting with your legs dangling out the side of the plane and someone's saying, "Go on, off you go." And you've just got clouds beneath you. But doing it is great. And, you know, 99 or 999 times out of 1,000, everything goes well. And you can't live your life by the 0.1% or the 0.01%. You just can't. I mean, it's a waste of, again, what I was saying, it's an insult to, you know, the space that you take up on Earth.
Yeah, no, I love that. It's such a great way of thinking about it, isn't it? Which is you've just got to face that fear, because we've all been fearful of something at some point in our lives, haven't we? And then we've had to do it for some reason, and then you come out the other side and go, "It wasn't that bad."
yeah. Here we are.
Yeah. I thought it was.
But you know, and that's why I like the opportunity that entrepreneurs have if they can grasp it, which is just the ability to do stuff without the fear of failure. And I think the other thing that makes a difference between Europe and the US when it comes to entrepreneurship is, in the US, if you go in the UK, if you go bankrupt, right, then effectively you're a pariah. You can't get debt, you can't get credit, no one will invest in you. Whereas in the US, they'll go, "Oh, he went bankrupt. Why?" Well, because he ran out of cash flow issues. Great, he's now de-risked that issue for me because he's learned, right? So that's someone I can back, believing that he won't make that same mistake again. So the way of looking at failure is very different. They see it as a de-risking process that you almost have to go through. And I often think that, you know, I've been very, very lucky in my life, and people say I've been successful. Well, I kind of have, but I think I've been lucky, because you only really know how something works when you work out how it doesn't work. Because it could be 10 ways to get to be successful, right? But there could be 9,000 ways not to be. And you've just chosen one of those 10 ways and you go, "Yeah, I got it right." Well, 10-to-1 chance, 100-to-1 chance, you know. But if you get it wrong a few times, then you know, de-risking yourself, you then hone in on what makes it workable and what doesn't. And then I'd say, yeah, okay, now I believe there's a bit of success, you know, there's a bit of talent in there because you've worked out what doesn't work.
I love that. And it's true, isn't it? I mean, a lot of the self-made millionaires, they've all been bankrupt. I remember saying this once when I was working for a big corporate, it's like the biggest millionaires, billionaires that we know have all been bankrupt once. They made the biggest mistake of their life, but they learned from it. And actually, that's what we've got to be able to do. We've got to be comfortable. That we can take that risk and learn from our failure, because it's not the mistake that defines us, it's what we do with that mistake, it's what lessons we take from it, isn't it?
It is. It's you know, I mean, when people sort of say, you know, what's the single important factor of success, and it's not being the quickest or the fastest or the strongest, it's just being the more adaptable, right? And that means just getting up one more time than you fall down. Resilience is so, so important, and that ability to flex, you know, and some of the best organizations have flexed many, many times in their sort of lifetimes. If you look at the Nokias of the world, and it's only when they refused to flex did they falter and stutter. So it's quite an interesting thing, and the rate of change that we're experiencing today, especially with technology and in the industry, means that if you don't have a fluid view of life, you're probably gonna be Ubered which is now a verb and a noun, you know, in a very short period of time.
That's so true. And I guess it's, you know, with all the emerging technology and the advancing in digitalization and things, people can start to feel a little bit overwhelmed, can't they, about how they adapt and engage with that and find their space in the world. Is there any advice you could give people that are feeling that?
Well, look, again, as you mentioned earlier on, right, the sun tends to come up most mornings. We may not see it that often in the UK, but Nat, in his sunny Mediterranean climes there, I'm sure does. And I think that we need to think about things as kind of try, succeed, learn, go again, right? And each of those are very important, right? And I was watching one of the annual sort of Star Wars marathon that we had the other day with the kids. And as Yoda says, you know, there is no try, there is do or don't do, you know, and it's fine, right? But you've still got to try to work out whether you do it or you don't do it. And I think that people need to have the confidence to have a shot at something. And they need to have the confidence to say, yes, I may well not get this right. And it's okay. And I'll get up tomorrow and I'll have another shot at it, or I won't. Right? But it doesn't matter. What matters is the try. So I disagree with Yoda on that one, but then again, who am I?
Oh no, I think that's great. And it's funny, one of the things that I've learned since having my own little girl is you just realize we learned. So we did so much when we were children and before we learned fear, because, you know, if we said tomorrow when you wake up, you've got to learn how to walk or talk or sit, you'd be terrified, wouldn't you? You'd be overwhelmed. And yet our most vulnerable, we already did that. We already learned it. And that was because we didn't know how to say no. And we wanted to be like everybody else. And I think the other thing that we had is people around us that absolutely believed we could do it. You know, your kids are trying to walk and you're like, come on, sweetheart, you're nearly there. Just keep trying. And I wonder if, isn't that's it something we've lost in later life.
Isn't it interesting? Because I think that I think we do have this it's a progressively built in fear of failure as we get older. And I think that's partly to do with what I said earlier on, where at the big, you know, when you're a kid, right? If you fall off your bike, do you know what? You just sit there and go, and you know someone's going to come and run and pick you up, right? Clean the injuries. And so someone's dealing with it for you, right? And that sort of support structure gives us the confidence to fail. Whereas in later life, there's no one there to pick us up. There's no one there to put the Band-Aid on, right? And so we've got to do, and therefore our view of the risk of falling off the bike changes.
Yeah.
Right. And we're less likely to fall off the bike. I mean, nobody wants to fall off the bike, but we're less likely to take the risk of falling off the bike because there's no one there to pick us up and you know, pat down all the injuries and things. So I do think that as we get older, with the increase of responsibility and the decrease of support bubble, you know, we probably get more risk averse.
Yeah, no, that is so true, isn't it? It's like one of the things I often say is the greatest gift you can give somebody is to lend them your belief in them, because I guess that
gives... That's a nice thing to say. I like that.
But I think, you know, when people have done that for me, that is, you know, when people have trusted me with an opportunity, I recognize that they are loaning me their belief that I can do it. And therefore I just do my best to make sure I don't let them down and that I live up to their belief. But in learning that, one of the things I now do for my people is loan them my belief in them and say, look, I believe you can do this. So borrow my belief and just try it. And things like that can really help somebody, can't they, to de-risk the falling off the bike.
I think that support structure, right? As you were just saying, yeah, you can do it type thing is super important. And, you know, I'm involved in a bunch of different mentoring structures. And mainly because, you know, my support structure when I was younger was quite limited. And I think it impacted my later life negatively. More from a personal point of view than a business point of view. I was very lucky in business, but in a personal life, I wasn't a brilliant husband first time around. I wasn't a brilliant sort of partner then. And, you know, I think a lot of that was from the fact that I didn't have the support structure giving me the confidence that I needed as a young person, as a child. So I think it's important that people get mentorship, not just, you know, oh, you're 18 years old, you're not a child anymore, good luck, off you go. But there's still so much learning that we do throughout our life, but you know, it's kind of a curve, right? And you know, you don't stop at 18, you just start learning different things at 18, with more responsibility and less nurturing. So I think that's a very vulnerable period of our lives.
Yeah, no, it's just true, isn't it? I mean, my nan used to say every day's a school day, and God bless, she was right, because yeah. We're still learning now, aren't we? The world's evolving, and therefore we've got to stay continuously curious, I think. You know, if we can keep our curiosity and want to learn more, then actually we set ourselves up for a positive future.
Absolutely.
So Mike, early on in your career, right, you at some point, there must have been some sort of points where you've stood there, like, and maybe stood up on stage in front of lots of people and been not petrified, but just been a bit like, well, what am I doing here? Did that happen to you at any point?
Well, not what I meant. What was I doing here? I mean, that's, I think if you're in a situation where you're saying, what am I doing here? I reckon that's, you've probably been on drugs for the night before or something, but, you know, I think that sometimes you come to a realization that there's a lot of happenstance and fortune in the journey to where you are. And I think, you know, sometimes you might realize I was having a fireside chat a few years ago with Bill Clinton on stage in Toronto in front of 2,000 people. And I was sort of thinking, I'm quite humbled to be sharing the stage with this person and having an equal participation in a fireside chat. I wasn't interviewing him. I was being interviewed with him, bizarrely. And that was quite a surreal kind of situation, but I didn't feel like, oh my God, what am I doing here? And I just felt a little humbled that I'd managed to have that much fortune in my life to meander through all the cracks with a little bit of BS, because I know that, you know, there are many times that I've progressed in my life and got it. Whenever I went for a new job back in the day when I applied for jobs, you know, it was always something I knew I absolutely couldn't do. And, you know, I blagged my way through appointments and interviews and, you know, you learn on the job, right? But there's not, if you're going to go for a job, you know, you can do, then it's very limited in its learning capability for you. And when I recruit people, I actually don't look at their CVs at all. I mean, somebody has probably triaged the CVs to get to a group of people that are applicable, but I never look at the CVs. I just want to talk to them. And I recruit for, attitude. I'm not interested, actually. I'll assume the triage is appropriate, but I'm not interested in who they've worked for, what they've done. I want a feeling of the individual, because what I ask them to do today may be very different to tomorrow, and I want to see their attitude, right? And one of my biggest pet hates in the world is people that start any response with, the problem with that is, right? That really, really annoys me. That one phrase is the most annoying phrase. So you can have a room of people and you come up, okay, so this is happening. You know, we've got an issue here. How do we deal with it? And some guy comes up with an off the wall idea. And then someone over there goes, the problem with that is, and then it's like, right, well, what's your answer then? Well, I think the problem with having an answer is, you know, and it's like, shut up, you know, leave. So that for me is, it's about attitude. And I think, you know, when I look back on that kind of imposter syndrome, the way I get comfortable with that is that I'm not an imposter with attitude, right? I'm an imposter with skills frequently. I'm an imposter with, you know, my reputation is far greater than my reality. So people ask me on boards because of my reputation. If, you know, they send me an email, they haven't even spoken to me. And that's bizarre for me, right? But they're going on my history. But my ability is not an imposter. Well, my ability is the imposter, but my attitude is not.
I love that. There's a quote I love, which I think kind of summarizes that nicely, which is reputation gets you in the room, character keeps you there. And you know, if you can have that positive attitude, and it is, you know, you always recruit for the willingness, because you can train for the skill. You can't train somebody's belief, can you? Their attitude to want to succeed, to want to try, to want to learn. Yeah. And if you can get somebody that's got that desire to do all of those things and to be willing to make a mistake but learn from it and to keep going, then
part of that comes out of the support bubble, right? Yeah. If you allow them to fall off the bike and treat them with care. So you put someone in a position and say, if you fail, you're fired, right? Then they will not get out of their comfort bubble. They will not get out of their envelope. And today you need people to push the envelope. So if you're going to tell them to do things that have never been done before, i.e. that go in a library, there isn't a book on how to do what you're about to do, you're writing the book, then you should expect them to get it wrong on their journey. And they should then expect you to be supportive in those dynamics. If someone does the same thing 10 times in a row, right, kick their ass out the door.
Yeah.
But if they're doing it wrong and learning, and you should be supportive because you're asking them to do something that someone else hasn't done before. So by definition, and by the way, you know, even with all the reference material in the world, I guarantee you can give someone every book ever written since the dawn of time on how to ride a bicycle. And the first time they get on a bike, they're going to fall off, right? So you know, it's about the physical effort and the physical experience of doing it. And if you have that support bubble, you know, picking them up, putting the plaster on and saying, get out there and get back on your bike, eventually they'll be riding like a pro.
Yeah, it's basically the attitude of learning by doing, right? Instead of learning by thinking about it.
Yeah, I think that's right. You've got to learn by practice, not by academic purpose. I think academic learning is a way to instill discipline and basics. Right? If you get basics of, you know, as we used to say, the three R's back in my day, reading, writing, and arithmetic. But if you can get those three basics, then I think everything else is demonstrating an ability to apply yourself, building up skills like in interpersonal skills, how you can get on with people in an environment, how you structure yourself, you know, all these sorts of things are what sort of school and uni and all those things are about. But real learning comes after that. Real learning comes from the doing of life.
That's so true, isn't it? It's the application of our knowledge, not the gathering of it, that really makes the difference. You've shared so much already, and it's been insightful. I could literally chat to you all day. But if there was one thing you know now that you wish you'd learnt sooner, or that you tell people that you see that are facing a fear, what would it be?
Something I know now. I think when again, you know, my sort of story of the sharks is important, right? Because you know, nothing we fear is as bad as we fear, because that's our mind saying, I have to prepare for all eventualities. I have to, you know, worst case scenario. You know, some people sort of say, what is it? hope for the best and plan for the worst, or I don't know, all these silly things that people say. But basically, you know, I think that if you know, we tend to over egg the negative outcome, right? And fear is like it's like a wasted emotion. There are many other happiness is a great emotion because it releases endorphins into the body, and endorphins make you more alert, which means you can think better, which means that you can probably overcome your challenges easier because you're thinking more alertly. Now, that means that you should be happy, right, rather than fearful. And you know, if you have an issue or a challenge in front of you, feel happy. And how do you feel happy about having a challenge in front of you? Well, the first thing is, everybody has challenges. You're not alone on that one. You're not unique. And there's been billions of people alive before you that have all had challenging, some infinitely more big or more great or more difficult to overcome than yours. So no biggie, right? Secondly, you should be delighted about having those challenges because challenges are the things we learn from, as we've just said. Thirdly, you should be happy with those challenges because every time you come to an obstacle in life, right, you simply need to overcome that obstacle for it to be the barrier between you and your competition. Okay, if you don't overcome it, and if there isn't an obstacle, there is nothing between you and your competition. The differentiators are in life are what you put by experience between you and everyone else, right? So you need those challenges to overcome them so that they are a differentiator between you and everyone else. Think of a hurdle, you know, in a 1500 meters hurdles or something. As soon as you get over it, everyone else has got to get over it too. And I guarantee someone's going to fall into the water. Someone's going to trip. And the more hurdles you get, the more likely you are to differentiate yourself from everyone else. Okay? So we should see these challenges and see these hurdles as non-unique and important in our ability to progress.
I love that. It's a little bit like when Roger Bannister did the 4-minute mile. It didn't take very long for somebody to do it.
To do it again.
Because he'd proven that it could be done. And I think that's the piece, isn't it? So when somebody gets over the hurdle, they disprove that the hurdle is insurmountable.
That's right. I think the only real proof, I mean, it's great in chemistry and physics, which, you know, I left school at 16, so what do I know? But my daughter talks to me about quantum physics, which I really still don't understand. Ultimate proof of anything only comes from a negative, right? So what she was trying to explain to me the other day was the Einstein theory of, you know, if you give enough chimpanzees enough time and enough pens and paper, they will write the complete works of Shakespeare, right? And it's, however unlikely that sounds, there's a 0.00001 chance of it happening. Or if you bounce a ball up and down a million times, once it's going to go over there. By definition, there's some point that there is no perfection, right? So at some point it has to happen. Therefore, the only true proof is when that happens, you can prove that 100% of the time that doesn't happen. So you've got to have the negatives to prove that, you know, to say that the general rule is positive.
Yeah. Which makes total sense, doesn't it? Because we live in a world of polarity. So for every up, there's a down, for every left, there's a right. So for every positive, there has to be a negative. And imposter syndrome affects 70% of us at some point. If this is affecting you, click the link to get help. I guess one of the things that I've loved about our chat, so much about it, but is your choice of words, because we live by our labels, don't we? And even, you know, talking right back at the start, when you talked with your family about not having failure, but having, you know, succeeding and things. And actually, if we change our label, we change our outlook on it. And I can't remember who it is that said it. They'd removed the word problem from their vocabulary and said, actually, all I've got is situations. I've got situations I enjoy and situations I want to change, but I won't have problem in there, because as the minute you say problem, you automatically start to feel like, oh my God, this is going to be hard. It's difficult. I can't overcome it. So from a psychological point of view, you put yourself on the back step to overcome that hurdle. Is that something that you do consciously, or has that just been something that you've learned over your over your life so far?
Well, I think I have a sort of a phrase which I learned a while ago, which is basically if you come across something that you're not happy with, I think this I kind of someone told me this when I was in my first marriage, and it's basically if you don't like something, if you're not happy, that you know that you've got you it's not allowed to sit being not happy. That's not allowed, right? Because you're that's the whole point of the insult to life, right? The insult to having a space on earth, because you're just wasting it. So your options are love it, leave it, or change it. Okay, those are the three options. So you either truly learn to change your mindset and love what you have, so it doesn't become a problem anymore. It is what you want and what you love, right? Or you leave it, you walk away, find something else, or you attempt to change the situation, right? But doing nothing is not an option, right? And sometimes you can try to change, right? And you can't walk away and you learn to love it. But if you can't learn to love it and you can't change it, then you have to walk away.
Yeah.
But doing nothing is not an option, right? So whenever you're in these environments where there's kind of everything seems too much of a big thing, well, can you change it? Can you learn to live with it? Truly learn to live with it, not uncomfortably, but truly embrace it. And if neither of those, walk away. Right? And I think, you know, it's a simple thing. And then we say, oh yeah, but you know, in the case of a marriage, oh, but I have responsibility. Do you think kids don't realize that you're unhappy? Right? And do you think that you're doing the other person a favor by dragging it out that much longer when they can't have another relationship in their life? So you know, that it's getting logical about things. Because you very often, as you say, you know, you get to a situation, oh, everything's becoming too, oh, it's, and then you just get in a slump and you get depressed and, oh no. And then you get inactive and, you know, those endorphins can never kick in. So your brain doesn't function properly. And all of this is nonsense, right? Because we don't, and very often, by the way, you know, our job is to look at things, you know, our roles in a company might be to look at things logically,
yeah.
Right? And we have this, and we're comfortable doing that in our skill set, like at school, right? And then the day comes when, you know, you go to an exam at school and suddenly they're asking you a question that wasn't on your curriculum, right? And then you, oh my God, I can't answer this question, like that. And that's exactly what we do in work, right? And suddenly we're, oh my God, and what's going to happen? I'm going to get fired. No, right? First of all, that's not your issue. If they haven't taught you, that's not your issue, right? You take the issue and you go, somebody tell me how to do this, because, you know, this has come on my plate. Don't want to walk away with it, walk away from it. And I'd like to learn, understand how to fix this. So help me out here. Right. And if you have that attitude, there's no depression at work. There's no kind of, oh my God, this is a disaster. It's like, guys, we've just found something that allows me to move over another hurdle.
I love that. That's such great advice. And inadvertently, without realizing it, I think that's what I did over my career, which was just like, well, I'll just learn. I'll just see what happens. What's the worst that can happen? And ask lots of questions. I think, I mean, I joke that I made a career out of asking the dim girl questions, because people just put stuff out there, don't you? Like, well, why do you do? Can I ask you, why do you do that? just so I understand. And if they don't know, it's like, oh, that's probably one to dig into. Because if we don't know why, we probably need to understand that.
Well, there's a great thing. You know, I used to have this sort of rule with our management meetings. And given the fact that I drank my own carrot juice and actually employed the best possible people I could in every role, then, you know, there was no way I was going to go and try to tell them what to do in their jobs, right? So once I'd imparted the vision of what we want to be famous for, then each one, no, the finance person, the marketing person, the sales person, all those, they should know infinitely better than I do, because I've found the best person for the job, on how to execute their element of that to get to what we want to be famous for. So then, you know, sitting in a meeting, right, they would come in and go, oh, you know, what do you think we should do about this? And I go, well, I don't know. What do you think we should do about this? You know, and you know, people want kind of confidence. And of course, they're not going to want to appear silly. So, before they've even asked the question, they've probably thought about three answers. So they go, well, I would say either do this or this or this, dot, 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 dot. And I go, well, which one do you think we should do then? And I go, well, I think we should do this. And I go, why? Well, because of this and this and this. Does everyone agree? Yes. Okay. And I don't answer any of the questions. I'm simply a conductor of the orchestra. If I've got the best violinist, the best pianist, the best drummer, the best bass, right? Why on earth I just need to make sure that they're all in harmony and they all know when to start and finish and they all know how long the music is and they all know what the beat is and all those things. But I don't do their job. And I can't do their job. So I think that's the thing. And when we're in a role, sometimes we have this concept of there's two things that people do. One is like the job's worth that says, this is my job and that's it. You know, anything out of here and it's someone else's problem. Limp, right? And then the other side of it is, you know, I try to do everything. I can't afford to delegate. I can't afford to engage. Because what if they do a good job and it shows me up as something that I didn't know? Or, you know, again, the imposter, right? Sort of saying like, oh crap, if I let someone else do this, then they'll realize I can't. And bang goes my, you know. But in reality, you know, there are things that you can't do, and there are infinitely things that other people can't do that you can. So, you know, it's the engagement, it's the interconnection, it's the collegiate view of how to get through a problem that we need to embrace. And you know, we all have something to give.
So basically, we're talking about just getting on with it, right? Like this, everyone we've interviewed, yeah, they've sort of wallowed a little bit in the imposter syndrome thing, but a lot of them are just like, well, just get on with it, you know. That kind of is a theme, I think.
Well, you know, I'm constantly amazed at how brilliant the Nike slogan is, right? Because just do it is so, like, it just works for every single part of life. And you know, I wish I'd have come up with that and sold it to him for $1 billion or something, but it is a brilliant phrase for everything. It's just do it. Don't worry about whether it's wrong. Don't worry, just learn and just do it again and just do it again, you know? And just thinking about it, and this is a live thought, so I haven't even thought about it before, but that Nike swoosh, that's actually the falling down and getting up again.
Oh, clever, yeah.
And getting further, so like a tick, but I've always thought of it as a tick, like, yes, just do it. But it's not. It's actually falling down and going further. There's my new thought of the day.
Thanks, Mike, for sharing your thoughts of the day. It's been really enjoyable. I always love talking with you, really.
Pleasure. I hope I'm not too much older next time you see me. we'll make sure we get it in again early.
No, you're looking well, considering like you're kind of stuck in London, right?
Exactly a year ago, I was 18 kilos lighter, heavier. And on New Year's Eve, so almost exactly a year ago, I left for the South Pole for my trek to Antarctica for charity. And I lost 8.5 kilos in 3 weeks doing that. And then subsequent to that, I've just been eating healthily, other than all these food deliveries we keep getting. But other than that, I've been just trying to sort of roast vegetables every day. And it's, you know, just carried on that sort of healthy lifestyle working from home. And again, very blessed to have, you know, a nice home to sort of feel comfortable in. But, you know, I think there are positives we can take out of every situation.
Yeah, well, that's good. You're bucking the trend. A lot of people have gone the other way, haven't they? You know, with the you know, staying indoors and
You're not looking any heavier. So, you know, I think unless you're covering it up with that beard.
If I stood up, right, like there would just be this massive, you know, blubber. Yeah.
Oh, dear. Mediterranean food for you now.
No, I'm kidding with you. But thanks, Mike, again. It's been a joy.
Thanks so much for supporting our show. Please do share this episode with your friends and business associates, and click the link below to subscribe to the podcast. Until next time, take care.